Hey, I know what'll cheer you up.
Welcome to the Bright Ideas Podcast, where we let proven experts help you to find the next bright idea to implement in your business today. And now, here's your host, Trent Deersmith.
This is unbelievable. This true force has never been fully understood.
Hey there, Bright Idea Hunters. Welcome back to episode number 135 of the Bright Ideas Podcast. I'm your host, Trent Deersmith, and this is the podcast where we help entrepreneurs to discover ways to use digital marketing and marketing automation to dramatically increase the growth of their business. If you're an entrepreneur looking for proven tactics and strategies to help you increase traffic to your website, to capture more leads, to land more customers, and ultimately to make more moolah, you are in the right place. So how do we do that? Well, in every single one of these episodes, or most every one of them, I invite an entrepreneur who is successful onto the show to share with me the exact strategies and tactics that they used to become successful. Sounds pretty good, right? Every single episode is like this ultimate free hour of consulting that you don't have to pay for. So it's a really good deal. And I've vetted these guests and I know that they're doing what they say they're doing. So you're really in for a treat. And in this particular episode, my guest is a guy by the name of Alan Vitberg, who is the owner of a relatively small marketing agency. He has a team of three, himself and two staffers, and some other partners and part-timers and so forth. And this interview is really tailored to the folks who are the solo entrepreneur. You are a one-man band, independent marketing consultant. You've got clients, but you're working like a dog and you're trying to think, my God, how do I build a team? How do I get my life back? How do I get from doing, you know, 80 or 100 grand a year to 300 grand a year? Well, this is the episode where we're going to dive into the details on exactly how Alan did that in his own business. We're going to talk about the niches that he picked. We're going to talk about how he generates leads. We're going to talk about how he creates content. We're going to talk about his content marketing strategy, which is so incredibly important to get right. If you're just sitting down and banging out blog posts, you might as well clunk your head against your computer screen, because without a strategy, those blog posts are not going to capture the number of leads that they otherwise could or should. And in this episode, you're going to hear a very, very detailed and clear walkthrough on how to build a marketing funnel. The other thing that you're going to hear on this is how Alan is using LinkedIn to generate, to stimulate conversation that makes people see him as a thought leader and want to consume his content. There are specific details that you need to get right if you're going to do this on LinkedIn. And I'll tell you, I was doing it wrong, which is one of the reasons why I got a little infraction slap on the wrist on my LinkedIn account, which thankfully has all been cleared up. And I don't make that mistake anymore. But in this episode, you're going to learn how to not make the mistake that I made. So we're going to welcome Alan to the show in just a quick second. Before we do that, I get a lot of emails from people asking me, Trent, what tools and resources would you recommend for split testing? Or what should I use for marketing automation? Or what should I use for email? Or what should I use for landing pages? You get the idea. I get a lot of questions. So I've got a page where I describe all the tools that I use. You can get to that page at grabtrentsbonus.com. So what's with that goofy URL? Well, some of the links on that page are affiliate links, which means if you click them and you buy the stuff, the company that makes the stuff sends me a commission for promoting their product. And that's kind of nice. It doesn't cost you anything extra at all. And I appreciate it a whole bunch. So I want to have a way to have a thank you to you for using my affiliate link. And so when you go to grabtrentsbonus.com, there'll be an explanation there of how you can send your receipt in. And then you can choose from some of my paid products, which I will give you for free as a thank you for using my affiliate link. Pretty cool, huh? All right. So with that said, please join me in welcoming Alan to the show. Hey, Alan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Trent. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah, no problem. And I appreciate the opportunity to have you on here to share the story of how you've built your agency in the very short amount of time that you've been running it. And I know that there's a lot of folks who are going to be inspired and looking forward to hearing some of the details of the things that are working for you. So we're going to get into that in just a minute. But before we do, for the folks that don't know who you are or don't know what your company is, please take just one moment if you would briefly introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
Good. Well, my name's Alan Vitberg, and I'm the owner of Vitberg LLC. We're a digital marketing agency and a HubSpot Gold certified partner out of Fairport, New York. And we do have a specialty in working with professional services, accounting and consulting and law firms. And, our mission is really to bring the word and the practice of inbound marketing to markets that traditionally are marketing adverse.
All right. So this interview, I'm really targeting towards those folks who are still kind of like the one-person operation. Because I know that you're, I think if I remember correctly from our pre-interview, you're maybe a little bit beyond that now. I know that you're doing a couple of $100,000 a year in revenue. I think you said 250 last year. Was that correct?
Yeah, well, we're on schedule to hit that $200,000 to $300,000 range, and that's with myself and two staffers and a lot of really great partners and strategic allies to help in various aspects of delivering inbound services.
All right, so that is ideal because there's a whole bunch of people out there who are still the solo operator. You know, maybe they're doing under $100,000 a year, and maybe they're working 16-hour days, and they're trying to figure out how on earth do I grow this thing and get my life back. And I hope that in the course of this interview, we can help them with some bright ideas to achieve exactly that. So let's talk a little bit about what your firm is and isn't first, so that they have an idea of whether this interview is going to be really relevant to them or not. You are, as a HubSpot Gold partner, my understanding is that you are really focused on content marketing, and you have most of your income coming from retainers, and most of your clients, I think about three quarters of them, are CPAs. Is that more or less correct?
That's correct. I mean, we have a process of bringing a client, on board and up and through the process of getting them literate with all of the ins and outs and working pieces of inbound marketing. But our ultimate goal is to move them to a point where we're executing against a strategic marketing plan that has very smart and specific and actionable goals that we can measure over the course of the relationship we have with them.
Okay. So why did you pick CPAs?
Well, that is my background. Before I was a HubSpot partner, I was a HubSpot client, and that was as the chief marketing officer of a very large, we call a mega regional CPA firm. And, our firm did about $50 million of billings a year. And back in 2007, 2008, after a website redesign, I got intrigued by this concept of closed-loop marketing, investigated vendors that were participating in that space, ran across HubSpot, and I was actually HubSpot's 300th customer. And I think now they're probably 10,000 or 11,000 customers. So I've been drinking the HubSpot Kool-Aid for a long time now and decided a few years ago to hang a shingle out too, because I saw a terrific opportunity to build a practice around inbound marketing and around the HubSpot tool.
So you're obviously paying a whole lot less for your HubSpot software than I am.
That's probably a good bet. That's right. Every time there's an innovation in the tool, I'm thankful that I've been grandfathered in for quite a number of years so far.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'm sure that's translating into a very large savings each and every month as I grind my teeth as I say that. So would you just...
Well, it's a wonderful tool. If you use it right, it's a great return on investment. But I still would say that probably the way I might put it is my return on investment is probably fractionally better because I'm paying less for it up front.
Absolutely. So being a CMO, were you ever an accountant, by the way?
No, never an accountant, never played one on TV. My background has always been in marketing. I have an MBA degree, and I just had a real interest in doing some trail cutting in professional services, because I really thought that it was an immature market, and it, to a large degree it still is when it comes to inbound marketing. But still, the opportunity is great. The folks that are my clients are great and very challenging to work with. And, you know, every day there's just some new type of regulatory or compliance change that makes it great to do inbound marketing for thought leadership to create offers so that it's a never-ending supply of content.
Yeah, I'll bet. Okay, so let's get down to the brass tacks and talk about how, when you first got started, let's go back to when you were an army of one.
Okay.
So I would imagine your first few clients, did they come from personal relationships or did they come from content marketing?
Well, they came from personal relationships, and you know, some of those first clients are still with me today. Mm-hmm. So as we've matured in you know, our use and our understanding of the inbound marketing, we've been able to retain those clients over time. And others have come in through our content marketing work that we do. We're a very active publisher of content across a number of different dimensions.
Well, let's talk about that then, because the personal relationships part, I think everyone kind of gets that, or at least I think that they do or hope that they do. And that's not generally really the focus of my show anyway. So let's talk about your content marketing strategy first, and then let's talk about some of the tactics that you're using to execute the strategy. So let's start with the strategy.
Well, I mean, the strategy always has some type of pain or issue at its root, at the very center. We're always have a tap on the pulse of what some of the key growth issues are for our clients, or even so what some of the key opportunities are that they're not taking advantage of. So, you know, our the first thing we'll investigate is what's the hot issue that our clients are facing these days. So, and from there, we'll have a discussion about how to bring the thought leadership to that particular issue. And a lot of times that is going to involve getting the technical professional, the licensed professional, to step up to the plate and add content, because we're not an accountant. We're not a licensed accountant. We're a little bit reluctant to offer accounting advice. So we look to our clients for, you know, to do that. So it starts with pain. It starts with finding the right resource to address that pain. And then the next step we'll talk about is what type of media we're going to use to package the thought leadership. And we, you know, right now we've got a huge range of ideas and opportunities, from, you know, blogging to video to white papers. You know, we do, you know, webinars on behalf of clients. So, you know, it's the opportunities to package and deliver the content is phenomenal. I mean, you just have a lot of choices. So that kind of takes you through a couple of steps in our thinking about how we get to the point of putting together the concept, how we get the concept, and how we look at the delivery vehicle for the concept.
And so when you figure out what some of these hot issues are, for example, for your clients, do you mean you just go start writing blog posts, or is there more thought that goes into the strategy? Do you organize it into campaigns? How do you come up with the white paper ideas? To fill in some of those blanks for me.
Well, I call it working backwards. And, you know, so we really start from the objectives and work backwards to the tactics. So, you know, my mantra to my clients is always the objectives and strategies first, tactics and what color fonts you want to use at the very end. Sometimes, you know, clients want to reverse that. They're more interested in, you know, the way an execution looks than its strategic objective. So we're very picky and very strict in working with our clients and saying, let's figure out what do we want to do in terms of sales? How does that translate into, you know, the leads that we need? How does that translate into the eyeballs we want to get on this? And so when we do a campaign, we'll work next on how we're going to promote the offer. And we do basically fully integrated lead generation promotions. So we'll use tactics that are going to include on-site tactics. Part of those on-site tactics may be anywhere from 4 to 8 blog posts that we will write on that particular topic. And each blog post is going to have a call to action that's going to drive somebody to the offer and put them into the lead flow and workflow process that we've developed. And then we'll also create other pieces of infrastructure depending on where a prospect may be in the relationship with the firms, you know, the contextual marketing that's really a hot topic these days. So around that given pain issue, our campaigns are going to consist of, you know, a top of the funnel offer, some middle of the funnel offers or content, and finally some bottom of the funnel offers, so that we are continually moving prospects who engage with us and deeper levels of the relationship until it's appropriate to call them and seek an appointment. So that's a broad strokes of how we might design a campaign around an offer and keep our eye on the ball that we're ultimately looking for a sale out of what we're doing.
So let's talk about some of the offers or white papers that you've used at the top, middle, and bottom of the funnel that have worked well for your clients being CPAs for the most part. What would be an example of one or two top of funnel offers that have converted quite well?
Yeah, well, I'll talk about one that is working pretty nicely right now, and it's around the sales point here is something that's called business valuation or exit planning. And for a CPA firm, that involves, you know, the ability to cross-sell tons of different products: financial planning, tax planning, charitable giving. There's audit issues, tax issues. There's just a cornucopia of different services for someone who is looking to leave their business. So we've got this pain situation where there are literally trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth in the process of being changed as the baby boomers start to age out and they're starting to look for opportunities to sell their business. So there's the pain right there, helping that boomer sell their business and do it in a way where it has certain tax advantages and results in the types of lifestyle and retirement style that they want to live. Okay, so that's the picture. That's the pain. So the top of the funnel offer that we put together was a white paper about that really talked about the 15 top of mind things that a business owner needs to think about when they sell their business. And so these went through, tax issues, that they dealt with employee issues, they dealt with financial planning issues. So again, we knew that somebody who had raised their hand and who asked for this white paper, we had a suspicion that these were folks that were thinking about exiting their business at some point in time. So the next part of the funnel that we put in was to put together a number of case studies around these different points of an exit strategy. And another part, a little bit deeper in the funnel, is we offered a checklist, a business exit checklist for somebody. And so that we tucked behind a form. And then a little bit further down the funnel, we put in a seminar where we invited that owner to attend a meeting where the accounting firm and a financial planner and a lawyer, you know, came and talked about exit planning. And then we used that as a springboard to make a call to bring someone to the table to talk about preparing an exit strategy for them and to deal with all of the accounting and compliance work that was necessary to get somebody a smooth transition. So that's, you see that we start broad with an educational type of offer, and we kept on narrowing the funnel to get to the point of identifying people that were really ready to exit and needed the help. And we were there with a brand name and with thought leadership and a relationship in place to ease the transition to a sale.
So logically, that makes a whole bunch of sense. And thank you for taking the time to walk us through that, because for folks who hadn't been through this before or haven't designed a funnel before, I think that the light bulb would have just gone on. Now, with the accounting firms that you have as clients, and you can pick any one that you'd like to talk about, and you don't have to name their name, of course, if you don't want to. Before, you know, because they probably didn't have a whole lot of activity at their website before you came along, I'm going to guess in most cases they had what I would describe as brochureware. Would that be reasonably accurate?
I think that, they had brochureware. I mean, they were getting, you know, a pretty good number of eyeballs to the site, but what they weren't doing was converting those eyeballs into leads, I think. And the other issue that they had is that they weren't using their websites as an opportunity to build the personal brands of the partners.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the assets you described, the business valuation white paper, is top of funnel. I'm assuming the case study and the business exit checklist were probably your middle of funnel assets, and the seminar invitation would be a bottom of funnel asset.
Yes. Yeah. That's, again, deepen the relationship is what the strategy was.
Okay. How about in your funnel where you're trying to attract these CPAs, what's working in the top, middle, and bottom for you?
Well, at the top of the funnel, I mean, I'll go like above the top of the funnel to start with. And that is, we have a very active and well-read blog. It's probably one of the better read blogs and professional services in the country at this point. We spend a lot of time, you know, giving that blog a special voice, and we do a lot of work to make sure that it is adherent to the best inbound marketing practices. So, the offers that we have are devoted towards different personas. For example, we know that one of the personas that we need to attract are the partners. I mean, the marketers at the accounting firms, play an influencer role. It's the partners that generally make most of the decisions about, budget decisions. So the top of the funnel, we do things like, we have something called the Partner's Guide to Inbound Marketing. We have the Partner's Guide to Blogging, the Partner's Guide to Lead Generation. So that is they're written very specifically for that persona, and with the appropriate amount of graphics, and we try to summarize things. I mean, so having worked with partners for a long time, I've got a touch for knowing what they will be willing to read, what type of tolerance they'll have for reading. So at the middle of the funnel, one of the things we did last year was we designed a survey of lead generation practices. And we worked with a couple of different trade associations, and we got hundreds and hundreds of responses. And the give here was that if you participated in the survey, then you got the full survey results. Everybody else got an executive summary. Mm-hmm. So we use the executive summary as an offer, but we use the individual respondents as and corresponded with those respondents to engage them in a conversation about their own lead generation practices. And at the bottom of the funnel, what we did is we offered a consultation about how to build leads for the practice with using the thought leadership of the partners. And that still is ongoing today. That's still, I had a conversation this afternoon with a partner who participated in that survey, and we're getting towards the end of tax season right now, and they're ready to think about doing some lead gen, and it worked. It's an example of how the funnel worked, and with a couple of different pieces of content.
Very nice. And you had mentioned to me that you had been featured on HubSpot's blog a while ago. Now, have you put much effort into syndicating or promoting your content beyond your own blog?
Oh, yeah. We're very, very heavy users of social media to promote our blog posts, especially in LinkedIn, and we're members of quite a number of different LinkedIn groups where we will use our blog posts as a stimulant to conversation. And we'll do that more than just promoting, come read my blog. What we always like to use some type of stimulant, and then we'll have a link to our blog. But I'm looking for dialogue and discussion in LinkedIn. And an example, a couple of weeks ago, we did a blog post about marketing priorities. And in the LinkedIn groups, we posed the question is, where do you spend your first dollar of marketing? What does it go to? And the action was great. We had a lot of very lively conversation. But we also publish newsletters on a monthly basis, and we, from time to time, I'll do some pay-per-click advertising, sponsored ads on Twitter or LinkedIn. But that's more infrequent than the time we'll spend on, posting through and doing dialoguing through LinkedIn.
So I want to hang around here on LinkedIn for a few minutes because it's an area where I have plenty of experience, but I don't know that I'm particularly good at it per se. So what a lot of many, many episodes ago, I interviewed a LinkedIn expert, and she'd written books on the topic and so forth. And what she told me to do is she said, for every post that you write on your own blog, make sure that you promote that post to all of the LinkedIn groups that you are a member of. And it worked really well for a while, and then it stopped working because we got banned. So I thought, all right, I got to stop doing that. How is it that you're using LinkedIn to promote your content?
Well, we're not promoting directly. We're promoting indirectly. So again, if I write a blog post, 12 ways to get more leads for your CPA firm, and just as an example, I would never use that as a title in any of the LinkedIn groups ever. What I would do is I would post a conversation about, the effective ways of generating leads for a CPA firm. And I put a teaser in, and again, I'm looking to stimulate conversation at that point, not necessarily to promote my blog. If people come to my blog because I put the link in and they mention something about it, we see a bump in traffic. But again, what I'm really trying to do with LinkedIn is, and with the blog to a certain respect, is become and be recognized as a visible expert. And that's a guy named Lee Fredrickson that coined that term, visible expert. And that's what I think the purpose of LinkedIn should be, is not to sell and not to use a blog post to hijack, or not to use a LinkedIn post to hijack a conversation for a sales purpose. It's to be part of a community and to contribute to the community. The spillover is you get visibility, you build your brand, and that translates into business opportunity down the road.
Okay, so let's stick with this for a minute, because I think there's some good ideas in here that I want to make sure I'm clear on. So you've got this post, you know, 12 ways to do X. You don't go to LinkedIn and just put the headline in there and a link to the post. Instead, you pose some questions to stimulate discussion. I'm assuming that the questions that you're posing, your blog post contains answers to those questions.
Yes.
And then when do you share the link, or do you ever share the link to that post that contains the answers to the questions that you asked in the group?
All the time. Yeah. Every LinkedIn the discussion that we initiate, we have a link to that blog post, every single one.
Okay. So do you put it right? Do you put it in?
Gotcha, go ahead.
When you're making that, when you're starting a new thread in LinkedIn, and so you say, you know, what are the ways that you're using to generate leads for your firm?
Right.
Are you putting the link to your post after that sentence, or where are you putting?
Putting it at the very end, at the very, very end. It's the last thing that someone's going to read. So, you know, and I think that's pretty common practice. I mean, that's, I don't, so I might start off to my LinkedIn conversation with something that might say, you know, my client thinks that, you know, referrals are the only way to build a business, but I don't think that's right. That might be my headline, you know, for LinkedIn.
Okay.
And then I might comment on it. And then I can say, and we've got some other ideas if you're interested, you know, here. And then we'll put the link to the post.
Okay,
we've never been banned.
So you put that first question up there. Some dialogue and discussion goes on between you and other people on LinkedIn. Bing, bing, back and forth. And then after some of that has happened, you make another comment in the thread that says, hey, we have a piece, you know, that contains the link to your blog post. Did I understand that correctly?
No, not really. We'll only put a link into our post at the time that we initiate the conversation. So we're only going to do that one time.
Okay, so you do it in the first post. You're just not titling the post, sorry, the thread in LinkedIn that you're starting. When you started, it does contain the link, but you're using like a teaser paragraph or whatever that's not directly promoting the blog post.
Right. It's designed to stimulate conversation in the community.
Okay.
And the spillover as people come and read the blog, you know, that they'll go and read the blog.
So
but one of the things that I, you know, quite frankly, just really peeves me is when I see a thread in LinkedIn that is maybe two or three conversations deep, and then a contributor feels the need to do a self-promotion. You know, I call that hijacking hijacking the conversation. And I think that's a horrible practice. I think that there are others like me who look at it as being overly aggressive and, you know, not within the spirit of what the community is trying to achieve. So, folks that listen to this conversation, be careful. Don't hijack the conversation. Contribute to it, but it just becomes obvious and obnoxious, and I really discourage that practice.
Okay, so you're asking questions. You're setting the stage in your first few. When you start a new thread, you've got a couple of sentences that have the goal of starting a conversation. And below those couple of sentences also happens to be a link to your blog post, and then you post that to LinkedIn.
That's correct.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get to. I wanted details.
we took a long route from
we did.
Got there. So,
we did. All right. All right. So where do we want to go from here? For people who are running the small agency, they're still at that one person level, and they're looking to expand to try, I call it, to kind of get their life back so that they're not the person in charge of marketing, sales, delivery, accounting, billing, sweeping the floor, closing the curtains, you know, everything. What's the first thing they need to do to start setting themselves up to be able to transition to building a team?
Build relationships and build relationships with other HubSpot partners. What I'm finding as the number of HubSpot partners grows, for example, that partners are starting to specialize. And some of them are specializing by vertical industry, some of them by the type of service they offer. But, it's always building those relationships so that you don't have to carry the weight of a HubSpot or an inbound marketing engagement by yourself. It's just too much to do. There's so many moving parts. We found that we just couldn't do it when we started and we were very young. So we took and we continue to talk to other partners to form alliances.
And I imagine LinkedIn, because I am a member of it, the LinkedIn, the HubSpot Partners Group, is that where you were able to forge a lot of those relationships?
I don't use the forum. I really like the forum because it gets into some very interesting conversations. But where I built most of my relationships is by attending HubSpot conferences. I was in Boston last week for a partner conference and, made a couple of great new connections, for some business ideas. And of course, the inbound conference in the fall is wonderful for doing that as well.
And I will be at that one, so I'll see you then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Did you attend last year's conference or any of the other ones?
No, never been to any of HubSpot's partner events. I am brand new with the company. My agency has only been using HubSpot for a month.
Oh, well, you will find a huge amount of value. And if other of your listeners are partners that have not attended, I would highly encourage attendance. You just meet a lot of great folks, and there's a terrific amount of camaraderie and enthusiasm for inbound marketing for the tool itself.
Yeah, that's one thing I have noticed about the HubSpot community. It's very, very vibrant and very passionate about the inbound methodology.
Drinking the orange, that's what we call it.
You got it. So you mentioned to me in the pre-interview that you recently got your first manufacturing company as a client.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Well, it actually happened with one of the alliances that we had established. At the last inbound conference, we were talking about how to work together. And they called up a number of months ago and said, look, we need a strategist to help work on this one client, and they're a manufacturer. Can you do it? And I said, it sounds pretty interesting. I think I want to try, something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And we did. So that opportunity actually came through one of the strategic partnerships that we had developed. And since then, we've gotten a couple of other opportunities. So we talk about, growing your agency and one of the strategies is grow vertically. So, we've got a pretty good niche and a name in the accounting and consulting world. And we're saying, well, maybe what we want to do is open up another niche here and start to build that. So that's how that all started.
Okay. And folks, if you are wondering how to build relationships and you're not in a position to attend conferences yet, as you've probably heard me many times before, start your own podcast. It is without a doubt the best relationship building tool on the planet, and it costs nothing to do. What haven't I asked you, Alan, that would round out this interview? Keep in mind, here's the target audience again. It's the person who is the solo operator. They've got clients, but they're kind of drowning. They need to build a team. They need to grow. They need to get to where you are from where they are. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that we should talk about?
Well, it may be, how do you prioritize your time? And I think that's the biggest struggle is, how you got a limited amount of time. Where do you allocate it? And that's a question that I think, you know, particularly crucial for the young company that's coming up. My sense is this, is that that you really need to have a great website. If you're going to devote time to building, you know, you got to have a great website, because it's going to be the center of your marketing universe. And then for offers, because you really need to put some offers up, use the HubSpot. HubSpot will provide you with white papers that you can co-brand or private label, so you're not spending your time writing. You can just leverage what they have. So, I mean, those are two of the priorities that I would recommend. As you grow and mature, it's, you know, turning your time and attention to building the partnerships and the alliances.
Mm-hmm. Yep, makes a whole lot of sense. And the thing that I would add to that, and this is one of the things that we do here at Groove, is that we put a great deal of time in. We have a membership site that is not for anyone but us, so we'll call it a wiki. And we systematically document every one of the processes that we rely on to build the business, from how to create a content strategy, how to build HubSpot, how to build a landing page, how to do a podcast. Everything that we do for a client becomes systematized and turned into, with training videos and checklists and all sorts of things. And so when you're coming to having built a team before of over a dozen people, I will tell you that the more collateral that you have to help them make sure that they do it the way you want them to do it, and the more accountability you build in, the far better off you'll be. And people say, "Oh, I don't have time to create all that stuff. I'm so busy chopping down trees, I just can't sharpen the saw." You got to take time to sharpen the saw. Maybe it's a Saturday morning.
Great.
You want to say something to that?
No. I'm just commenting that that's great. Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement with that.
Yeah. Because otherwise, eventually what happens is, see, as a solo operator, you have a choice to make. You can have growth or you can have control, but you can't have both.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to control absolutely everything, you have to do it all yourself. And if you can't or don't want to do it all yourself, which is foolish to say the least, you have to create systems so that other people will do it the way you want it done.
That's sage advice, I think, and well put. And you're right. That should be part of the prioritization of the time and the resources that you need to expend.
Yeah. And, you know, folks, you don't have to carve out like 3 days to do this in a block. If you simply say, you know what, I'm going to take one of my processes and document it every day. Maybe it's only 20 minutes or half an hour. But after a month or two or three of doing this, you start having a meaningful library of stuff. Like, our wiki is stuffed full of processes. And I mean, I just can't imagine not having that stuff. All right, Alan, for folks that want to get a hold of you, what is the easiest way for them to do that? And we only need one way. Some people list off five or six ways when I ask that question. Just one will do.
The one way is that you'll reach me by email. It's avitberg@vitbergllc.com.
Okay, and that's VITBERG, right?
Right, that's right.
Okay. Alan, thank you so much for making some time to be on the show. It's been a pleasure to have you, and I wish you all the continued success with your firm going forward.
Trent, thanks so much, and again, appreciated the opportunity.
All right, to get to the show notes for this episode, go to brightideas.co/135. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do help me spread the word about it by going to brightideas.co/love, where there is a pre-crafted tweet awaiting the click of your mouse. Mouse, not mouth. Anyway, that's it for this episode. I am your host, Trent Dearsmid. Thank you so much for tuning in. I look forward to having you back for another episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much for listening to the Bright Ideas Podcast. Check us out on the web at brightideas.co.
All right, show's over. I'm tired.